A new report by the World Bank called Rising Global Interest in Farmland highlights the sharp increase in foreign purchases of vast tracts of land in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. In 2009 alone, about 45 million hectares of land were bought. According to the World Bank, the recent food crises, as well as a growing interest in biofuels, are among the motives spurring the purchases by both governments and corporations. But while the report warns of a lack of transparency and the potential harm to poor people, it ultimately endorses the land grabs in the name of productivity and sound investment. An earlier version of the report with an entirely different title was leaked about a month ago, but most media outlets have not connected the two this week. The leaked draft was publicized by the Bay Area-based Oakland Institute, a think tank that has published in-depth reports on land grabs and the food crisis, and are critical of institutions like the World Bank. A year ago, the Oakland Institute was sounding the alarm with their October 2009 report entitled "The Great Land Grab: Rush for World's Farmland Threatens Food Security." Security for the poor. More recently, they challenged the World Bank with a report this past April entitled "Misinvestment in Agriculture: The Role of the International Finance Corporation in the Global Land Grab." I spoke recently with Anuradha Mittal. She is the executive director of the Oakland Institute. What is the difference between this report that was just released officially by the World Bank and the one that was leaked just about a month ago?
Well, what we have been told, I have not seen the first version of the report that was leaked by actually an official who was working on the report and was afraid that the actual findings will not be made public, the report has been changed. It is not being honest. It is not clearly identifying the problems that the World Bank study initially found with land grabs. Rich investors, rich nations buying up land in poor countries. And so this is a milder version of it, as we have been told. And as you pointed out, Sonali, on one hand, the report is saying that there are problems with these land grabs and takeover of lands in poor nations and the implications on food security, and that the benefits don't necessarily accrue to the local people. But at the same time, it goes on to advocate for the trend to continue, which is a real problem.
So the titles of the two reports, the initial version, draft, if you will, that was leaked versus what was finally released is also interesting. The official report that was just released is called Rising Global Interest in Farmland, which doesn't really take a position. But the draft that was leaked was called The Global Land Rush. Can it yield sustainable and equitable benefits? Completely different titles. Does that essentially reflect the differences between the draft and the final report?
It sure does. You know, when you're talking about a trend, you know, it is non-committal. It doesn't suggest anything, whereas the first draft actually asked the question, which is being asked internationally by the media, by civil society, most important by the communities who are being impacted by these land grabs.
So who is doing the buying and where is the land that is being bought?
Well, you know, when we talk about land grabs, we need to step back. On one hand, it is a trend which has really gained momentum since 2008, when the food prices skyrocketed. As we know, between 2005 and 2008, prices of food increased by nearly 83%. So the people who have moved in are various actors. On one hand, you have rich nations who are food insecure. For instance, Japan, South Korea, who depend on nearly 60 to 70% on food imports for meeting their food needs. You also have Gulf states who saw their import bills increase drastically during 2008, and they want to ensure secure food supplies. So they have set up sovereign wealth funds, and agencies and the governments are buying up land in poor countries, while lands are also being bought in Asia and countries such as Laos, Cambodia. This trend is also happening, and actually is happening in a very big way in Africa. At the same time, there are investors. You have your Goldman Sachs, for instance, and private investors who have seen, with the collapse of the housing market, that they need to find other soft commodities market where they can invest in. So they have also moved in to buy lands. In fact, the whole range of conferences being organized for private investors. There's one coming up called Agriculture Outlook in Africa, which is there's one called Africa Mining. There's one happening in Geneva, which is all about how to make profits with the demand for agricultural land going up.
Now, one of the reasons that the World Bank report that was officially released cites as spurring this land grab is the rising interest in biofuels that can be traced back to 2003. And a lot of countries not only wanting to secure their food future, but their energy future as well. Do you think that they're accurate on this count?
Oh, definitely. Sorry, Sonali, I didn't mention that. Yes, on one hand, you have food insecure nations, but also a lot of land is being bought up in African countries is for biofuel plantations. For instance, in Sierra Leone, there's a very big project that is being run by Adex Bioenergy, which is a Swedish company. So your investors are not just the Chinese or the Middle Eastern countries, but also England and Sweden and their agencies and their corporations who are, you know, buying up thousands of hectares of land and converting fertile land to grow jatropha or to grow sugarcane for ethanol to be exported back to Europe.
Now, your organization, the Oakland Institute, had been warning of the land grab for a while. Just a year ago, you released a report called The Great Land Grab. But even this April, you came out with another report called Misinvestment in Agriculture, the Role of the International Finance Corporation in the Global Land Grab. What role do institutions like the World Bank and, say, the IMF actually play in encouraging these purchases of land by rich investors in poor countries?
Well, you know, when the media, for instance, has talked about land grabs, they have talked about, you know, and they have had long articles about Indian corporations buying up land in Ethiopia, the Chinese. And so one tends to have this image of, you know, countries that are exploiting other African nations. But at our work at the Institute, what we have found is that this trend is really being promoted as a new development paradigm very much by the same international agencies such as the World Bank that have created food insecurity in poor countries. So what we found in our work is that the International Finance Corporation, which is the private lending arm of the World Bank, through its advisory services, has been promoting changes in the investment climate in poor countries. You know, in 2008, you had the food crisis, and at the same time, you had the financial crisis. So you had countries more willing to make those reforms that would make themselves attractive to foreign investors, and the advice has been to change land laws. The advice has been to make agricultural land available. So if you look at the ranking, business rankings that are done by IFC of third world countries, they rank them not on the basis of having good labor standards, good environmental standards. They rank them as being a good place for investment by saying there's a lot of fertile land available, that the labor is very easily available and cheap. So it is a whole comparative advantage which is based on exploitation of the poor, and they have really pushed and promoted through advisory services these land grabs in third world countries. And we are challenging them, saying that the performance standards, that their goal of eradicating poverty should also be applied to the technical advisory services which are actually causing far more hunger and poverty in poor African nations.
I'm speaking with Anuradha Mittal. She is the executive director of the Oakland Institute. We're talking about a new World Bank report that was just released. Rising Global Interest in Farmland is the name of the report. An earlier version of the report that was leaked had a different take, a slightly different take, if you will, on the issue of a global land grab that's happening around the world. Now, how do you analyze the World Bank's position in this new official report in terms of these land purchases? Because they are critical, but it seems as though they're critical of a lack of transparency. And they think that if done right, land purchase in this way that's being done can actually be beneficial for poor people. And they also talk quite a bit about food security.
Well, Sonali, the problem is that the World Bank always takes a very top-down development approach, and that's what it's doing here once again. So even if we had transparency, what kind of deals are we looking at? You know, at the Institute, we are looking at deals across Africa. We have a very big documentation project going on, and what we are finding is that you have deals which go on for 99-year lease, where in some cases, investors are paying only 99 cents per acre per year. They do not have to pay any taxes, they do not have to pay any utilities, and they do not have to pay anything for the first 4 years. So even if you made these kind of deals transparent and you know the details of it, The problem is that this whole rhetoric of making it a win-win situation, the World Bank is forgetting that there are no victories for the local people. So you are looking at Ethiopia, for instance, which has this great land lease project happening, where the government is planning to lease out nearly 7.5 million hectares of land. This is a country where nearly 13 million people depend on food aid. So imagine trucks of food aid coming into Ethiopia while trucks full of grains of ethanol being taken out of Ethiopia. So the picture is so upside down and backwards, and World Bank can justify it as a win-win situation, is ridiculous.
Also, Anuradha, it seems as though they're constantly talking in terms of productivity. I want to quote from Klaus Denninger, the lead economist in the World Bank's Development Research Department and the author of this report. He says, currently, none of the African countries of interest to investors achieves even a quarter of its potential productivity. Rather than focus only on an expansion of uncultivated land, it is important that investors and governments support improvements in technology, infrastructure, and institutions that can improve productivity on existing farmland. And it seems as though the language that's often used implies that a land that is uncultivated or undeveloped is just sort of lying there ready to be bought up and not being useful or productive. And the World Bank simply wants it to be productive. What's wrong with this type of language?
Well, first of all, Sonali, I think the bank hasn't done a real research to determine what is ideal land in different countries. For instance, in Tanzania, where land grabs are happening, so-called idle lands might be the necessary corridors for the pastoralists to move. Otherwise, there would be chaos. Their livelihoods would be impacted. Their existence would be threatened. So on one hand, you have that picture. But at the same time, this whole high-input approach fits in with that whole image of industrialized agriculture. So on one hand, while the bank talks about improving livelihoods of people, it wants to bring in these big plantations which do not need small farmers, which are run by machines, which would cause more devastation in terms of livelihoods of people, who then would also not have access to their own food because they would not have their own fields. So it is basically facilitating foreign investment for a very top-down approach, industrial agricultural system, assuming that small-scale agriculture that feeds people and communities is futile and useless. You know, it believes that the people's right to land, the fact that the landless people's movement, whether it's South Africa or in Mozambique, when they've been demanding agrarian reform, is not needed, and the big corporations such as Cargill and others can come in and grow food. And also they're forgetting that the whole idea of growing food in Africa is not to feed the Africans. It is for growing food for exports. It is growing ethanol, you know, grains to be converted into ethanol for export to Europe. So it is the old-fashioned colonialism of going into Africa, extracting its resources, and leaving the place high and dry and its people poor.
Which all of this is very much intimately involved with the method and the sort of system of food production, highly industrialized and centralized food production that we are all, in a way, trapped in. But yet the World Bank uses the words sustainable quite a bit. In their own press release, they talk about how the report says the investments should do no harm, be sustainable and contribute to development, adhering to principles including respecting the land and resource rights, ensuring food security, consultation and participation, social sustainability and environmental sustainability. It seems as though they use the kind of language that is important to environmental activists and to social justice activists, but food sovereignty is something that we rarely hear.
Oh, of course. I mean, we know from the record of the World Bank that they're very good at poor washing and greenwashing, you know, that their policies are great for the environment, they're sustainable. They have taken over the language of the progressives, poor washing, that their policies are all about benefiting the poor African nations and the poor inhabitants. You know, you mentioned our report, Misinvestment in Agriculture, which questioned that, yes, we do need investment in agriculture, but we need to be aware of the fact what kind of investment we make. And Howard Buffett, who wrote the foreword of the report, I think asked some very pertinent questions in his foreword. And I think that's what we need to turn around and ask the World Bank and its officials who write such reports, that when local people lack land rights in so many places, why should foreign interests have priority over them? We need to ask what assurances are in place to mitigate food insecurity risk for local population. We need to ask that what evidence is there that would suggest that the new land deals will be transparent when the previous ones have been done in total secrecy? Now, why should we believe that the communities will be incorporated into the negotiation process when we know that they're rising up and challenging such land deals? So we need to ask these questions, because when we kind of go through their maze of language of sustainability and the rest and challenge them with the questions, we are dealing with the principle of food sovereignty, that before we start thinking of land as just a commodity, we need to talk about the human right to food and people's right to be able to determine what happens with their lands. It is interesting that World Bank will not talk about that a government was toppled in Madagascar because half of the country's arable land was being sold to Daewoo, a South Korean company. That just recently in India, POSCO, where a South Korean company, steel company, was going to take over forest lands and destroy livelihoods and ways of living of indigenous communities, the Ministry of Environment has put a stop to that project. Or it will not talk about Vedanta's plans, again in India, where the local people who inhabit land and have inhabited land for centuries are being removed in the name of development. So I think the primary thing that we need to focus on is the will of the people. What do the local people want whose lands are being taken away? And what kind of recourse they have to ask for justice and for the land?
Well, Anuradha Mittal, where can listeners find all of the reports that your organization writes about these issues?
Please visit our website at www.oaklandinstitute, which is one word, .org. And you already mentioned two reports, Sonali. One is The Great Land Grab. The other one is Misinvestment in Agriculture. And in fact, you can find them on the homepage of our website.
And that's oaklandinstitute.org. My guest, Anuradha Mittal, is the executive director. Anuradha, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.